Support for the New Hampshire News Recap comes from you, our listeners, and from New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, helping neighbors invest in neighbors to realize their dreams of affordable homeownership and small business growth. More details at communityloanfund.org/radio.
This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. Education reforms dominated the state legislature this year. Most efforts failed, though a few bills await action from Governor Kelly Ayotte. Here to give us some details is NHPR's Anne-Marie Timmons. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, Rick.
So lawmakers rejected bills mandating new public school courses, open enrollment expansion, and increased oversight of the state's school voucher program. What are the big takeaways from this session?
I think first is this is a reminder that many, many of the bills that we'll see filed early in the year on any issue are not going to make it. This year, we had more than 1,000 bills filed, and a fraction of those make it to the governor's desk. So that's first. I think in terms of education, there were a couple takeaways. One, lawmakers didn't have an appetite to mandate new courses in the public schools. There were bills calling for logic and critical thinking classes, hunting, firearm safety, more math. And those all failed. And adding new course requirements does create significant work for towns and school districts, but it can also be really expensive. For example, when lawmakers mandated civics education recently, it cost the Department of Education $1 million just to create the standards, and they continue to spend money to evaluate the test scores. So it's work, it's expensive, and so we didn't see any of those get through this year. And Republicans prioritized expanding options for students and families who don't want to go to public school or find that's not working for their child. And those efforts failed. For example, they were unable to lift the cap on the number of students who can use school vouchers. They wanted to have no cap. And they weren't able to pass open enrollment,
which would have made it easier for New Hampshire students to attend any public school in the state and harder for their districts to stand in the way. How did that fare, and what happens now?
Well, you know, interestingly, early in the session, we saw Republicans trying to fast-track this legislation. It was such a high priority. That stalled, and it continued to run into problems as we went. I think what the issue was is this was a very high priority for some Republicans, but it was also a concern for others in the party, including Governor Kelly Ayotte. And that's because the bill would have allowed students to go anywhere in the state and take their local tax dollars with them. So there was a financial concern. Public schools raised concerns about how do we manage this. There was a bill that would have studied this for a year. That was shelved by Republicans. And so ultimately, the bill almost got to the governor, but the Senate tabled it rather than risk what was we expected would be a veto from the governor. I think you can expect to see this back next year. Republicans have already said, you know, looking back, we did a lot of work that will be essentially useful for next year. So this will come back, I think.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, open enrollment and vouchers, I know Democrats have continued to target the state's Education Freedom Account program, saying that there should be more scrutiny. What are they trying to do?
They really want the state to take more control over how this multi-million dollar voucher program works. The voucher program in New Hampshire is unusual in that it's funded by the state, but it's run by a nonprofit that is not subject to public records laws. And that means this nonprofit does not have to disclose records and policies that would be available if the state did run the program. There is an audit underway that's been sort of in the works since 2022, so you can kind of appreciate how hard this has been for Democrats. And so Democrats ideally want the state running this program. If they can't have that, they want more oversight of parts of the program.
NHPR's Anne-Marie Timmons. Anne-Marie, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The federal courthouse in Concord handles all kinds of cases, but over the past year, one particular type of case has shot up. Habeas corpus petitions by people detained by ICE. Lawyers say filing these petitions is a way for detainees to get due process, but the sheer number is putting a strain on the system. NHPR's Lau Guzman has spent some time looking at the cases filed in the past 2 years, and she joins us now to talk about what she's been learning from people directly involved with these petitions. Good morning, Lau.
Hi, good morning, Rick.
So, to start off, what is a habeas petition, and why file it?
Yeah, it's so old that it's in Latin, but it literally means to produce the body. And you're essentially asking a federal judge to look at your case and decide whether the government has the legal authority to detain you. And one of the central questions in this wave that we've been seeing of New Hampshire cases is this idea of due process and whether you've been given a bond hearing. And most of the cases I've looked at here are detainees who say that ICE didn't get them a bond hearing, so they're filing this habeas petition.
Were you able to get in touch with people who had filed one of these cases?
Yeah, I met one former detainee from Stratford County Jail. His name is Christopher Ortega Varela. He's 21, he's from New Jersey, and he was stopped by ICE while driving through Manchester. He spent about a year in detention and filed a habeas in the federal court here. And Christopher did come from Honduras when he was a kid, and he's bilingual, which meant that he spent a lot of his time in detention trying to help other detainees. I do have a clip from our phone conversation if you would like to play it.
Sure.
I never had court. So, like, I literally waited all that time. I was always translating for guys in my unit, getting in contact with the lawyers when they needed somebody to translate because some prisons didn't have, like, interpreters. So you really get to know their stories and what, like, their lawyers are talking about, like, everything about them. And it was pretty sad, man. Like, my case was, you know, hard, but there are cases out there that are very, very, very hard and sad.
So, Lau, what happened in his case?
So, Christopher's habeas case took about 6 months, and it was eventually dismissed as moot when he was deported to Honduras. He's living with his family now, and he's trying to stay positive, working on getting his phone back, finding a job in Honduras while he figures out a way to come back to the U.S. And when we did speak, he wanted me to send a shout out to his friends, if you wouldn't mind playing that.
Sure.
I'm good. I'm cheered. I'm vibing. I'm going back on my socials soon.
So he's trying to make a new life there.
Yeah, he said his phrase was make lemonade.
This is one case, Lau. I mean, how many cases have there been across New Hampshire?
Yeah, so we've had 253 between January of 2024 and May of 2026. And most of these cases were filed this year. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is pretty significant, especially in a small district like New Hampshire. During 2024, habeas cases for immigrant detainees were less than 1% of the cases in district court, but by last month, they were about 30%. And this does follow national trends. We've been seeing a ton more filings across the whole country. And shout out to ProPublica for some great data reporting. Our listeners should definitely go check that out.
You also, I know you talked to an attorney who's been involved in a lot of these cases. What did he tell you about them and what he's been seeing?
Yeah, so I did speak to Brandon Ladebush. He's an immigration lawyer based in Dover, which is where the Stratford County Corrections is. He's been pivoting and has been filing a lot of these habeas corpus cases lately, partnering with attorneys in Massachusetts. And he says this uptick is not just because we've been housing more detainees here in New Hampshire, but a change in how the Board of Immigration Appeals is handling these cases. And it gets complicated. There are class action lawsuits and a lot of, you know, very complex legal battles here. But he said many detainees aren't automatically given a bond hearing anymore, so they have to file a habeas petition to get one. And I have a clip from him, too.
These people are eligible for bond, but the immigration court's still not following it, so it's necessitated a large amount of these cases to still be filed in federal court.
So how does this fit in, Lau, with the rest of the cases that are coming through the District Court of New Hampshire?
Yeah, I also asked Brandon about this since he's, you know, in court all the time. And he said it's been tough on lawyers, U.S. attorneys, judges, and the immigrants, their families. They all have to wait months for these petitions to go through. I also have a cut from him there.
I think there's just overall a huge burden on the system that's causing immense stress for the immigrants, for the attorneys, for the judges, I think across the board.
And I did ask the district about the impact of these habeas filings on their capacity, and they did say that they had no comment at this time.
Okay, I was going to ask you that. What are state officials saying about this overall?
No comment.
Yeah. Okay. NHPR's Lau Guzman, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for the invite.
To look at the data analysis from Lau and more from her interviews with Christopher and Brandon, you can head over to nhpr.org. The Hampshire Secretary of State's office has been very busy in the last couple of weeks with candidates filing for this fall's elections, and NHPR's Todd Bookman gave us this report about the biggest field in the state's first congressional district.
With Congressman Chris Pappas running for Senate this fall, the district covering Manchester and the eastern part of the state is up for grabs, and candidates of all stripes are grabbing at it, including Republican State Rep. Brian Cole.
I'm a thinker, right? I'm not a rubber stamp. I'm going to do what's right for the people in New Hampshire.
He's up against Melissa Bailey, a financial professional turned stay-at-home mom from Bedford. There's also Holly Novoletsky, who narrowly lost in 2024's GOP primary in this race. And Anthony DiLorenzo, a deep-pocketed car dealer who wasn't shy when it came to pitching his own credentials.
I am at least 10 times more qualified than anybody else running. And just look at our track record. Just look.
And that's just the Republicans. There are also plenty of Democrats. Campaigns like Stephanie Shaheen's turn their filings into mini campaign rallies. The daughter of Jean Shaheen, Stephanie, stressed she'll earn her own way in this race.
So I'm running based on my own record of service and my commitment to fighting this administration, and I think that's what people are looking for, a trusted fighter who can deliver results.
But her opponents, including Christian Arudia, an Army National Guard officer and former Airbnb executive, predict the Shaheen name will cut both ways with voters.
They want something new. They want new energy. And so when people say, oh, well, the way we get change is to elect Stephanie Shaheen, I just don't think that's a very serious argument.
The Democratic field includes at least seven candidates. There's Stratford State Rep Heath Howard and nonprofit director Sarah Chudzinski and Bill Conlon, an ex-state rep who's refusing to accept campaign donations. Maura Sullivan, a Marine who also ran for this seat in 2018, has meanwhile led the way in fundraising. And then there's Carly Berriant, who chairs Hampton's select board.
Literally, I have the receipt that shows that I am running for Congress, and I think we're going to win this race in September, and we're going to win in November. Yep.
Everyone else, of course, is thinking the exact same thing. Todd Bookman, NHPR News.
As America prepares to celebrate its 250th anniversary, a New Hampshire museum has been showing off its collection of historic artifacts, centuries in the making. NHPR's Aman Moyne sent us this from the American Independence Center in Exeter.
Concord may be New Hampshire's current capital, but back during the American Revolution, the colonial government sat in Exeter, and that history informs the collections of the American Independence Center. The Ladd Gilman House, built in 1721, now houses the center's main collection. But during the Revolution, it was the office of Nicholas Gilman, New Hampshire's treasurer. Callie Kramer, the curator and center manager, and Joe Pace, the Independence Center's executive director, show me around. We stop at a display of Revolutionary-era money.
These are actual currency pieces anywhere from 1773 all the way to 1785.
I always say they look like they're baseball cards if they've been done by Tolkien.
The center also owns the Folsom Tavern, built in 1776. Several years after that, Pace tells me, it hosted a breakfast for President George Washington.
He had made it a point during his presidency to visit all 13 original states. And so he came here, he went to Portsmouth, and they had a big celebration there. He came here just on his way south, had a brief stop for breakfast, and they were going to have a parade here in Exeter, but he had his horse saddled up and was out of town before the organizers could make it happen because he was kind of tired of parades at that point.
As Pace says, inns like the Folsom Tavern were at the heart of colonial-era life.
Taverns, of course, were places where people went to gather, to eat, to drink, to exchange information, to spend the night, you know, to make business deals. They were sort of the internet of the day.
The American Independence Center will display its authentic Dunlap broadside copy of the Declaration of Independence, originally printed on July 4, 1776, at its American Independence Festival this July. Iman Moyne, NHPR.
You'll find more of our coverage of America's 250th at nhpr.org. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.